exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. If you are a parent or student in the Kenosha Unified School District, you've probably come across the letters PBIS at some point in your schools. But what is that? Why do we have it? And how does it work? For some basic information, I just consulted the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction website, which said, and I quote, "Positive Behavioral Intervention and Supports, or PBIS, is a systemic approach to proactive school-wide behavior based on a response to intervention, or RTI, model. PBIS applies evidence-based programs, practices, and strategies for all students to increase academic performance, improve safety, decrease problem behavior, and establish a positive school culture. Schools implementing PBIS build on existing strengths, complementing and organizing current programming and strategies. The PBIS model has been successfully implemented in thousands of schools in over 40 states, resulting in dramatic reductions in disciplinary interventions and increases in academic achievement. Database decision-making is a hallmark of PBIS, allowing successes to be easily shared with all relevant stakeholders." Okay, that statement is full of a lot of interesting claims and jargon, and it's kind of difficult to untangle, but we have several people here to help us do that today, including teachers and administrators from the Kenosha Unified School District. They are Jane Larson, who is in her 25th year of teaching in KUSD. She was a classroom teacher for 18 of those years and also served as an instructional coach and interim principal, and is currently the district's PBIS teacher consultant. Hi, Jane.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Jeff Wirch has been teaching in KUSD for 21 years and teaches at Bradford High, where he teaches anatomy and physiology and biology classes and is one of the instructional leaders. He was the KUSD High School Teacher of the Year in 2013 and the recipient of the Outstanding Biology Teacher Award for Wisconsin in 2015. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, thanks for having me as well.
And Ed Kupka is the coordinator of student support, who works with all school counselors and social workers in the district, including such programs as PBIS, bullying prevention, and the district mentoring programs. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how are you?
And then last but not least, we have Crystal Brandt, who is currently a fifth grade teacher at Brass Community School. She's in her 19th year teaching in Kenosha Unified, and the majority of her experience has been at the middle school level as an English teacher, instructional coach, and curriculum consultant. Hi, Crystal.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I'd like to begin by asking Jane Larson to clarify this topic for us. If you needed to give parents or new teachers the 30-second elevator pitch, the kind of thing where you're locked in an elevator with somebody, and they asked you about PBIS, how would you describe it?
Well, I would say that PBIS is a school-wide approach to establish a climate where appropriate behavior becomes the norm. So there's four goals for PBIS: increase academic performance, improve school safety, decrease problem behaviors, and establish positive school culture. And PBIS is implemented in levels, and we call them tiers. So tier one is the universal level, which includes the teaching, the reviewing, the reinforcing, and maybe reteaching of the school-wide expectations, or what some people might have referred to as rules. And then all students and staff are using the same lingo, kind of everyone's on the same page, they have basically the same expectations. And about 85% of students will respond to tier one implementation. So if I could compare it to an academic example, for instance, a teacher might teach a math lesson and most of your students are going to understand the math lesson. But then you might have a few that don't understand it. And so you're going to take that small group, you have to do something. You might give them extra help, you might do some one-on-one teaching. We believe that teaching behaviors is the same way. So if students don't respond to the first teaching, the tier one level, then they might need tier two behavior interventions, which could look like reteaching of skills. It could look like having a mentor, something that's more personalized to help students who might need tier two interventions.
Okay. So it sounds like there are lots of kids, well, not lots, but some portion of kids come to school maybe not knowing what behavioral expectations are there for them. Is that right?
That is right. We're seeing more and more that everything from, you know, when to raise your hand to the procedure for sharpening a pencil, everything needs to be taught. And we are even teaching our new educators, don't take anything for granted. Mm-hmm. We need to teach them everything and reteach and practice. How do we walk in the hall? You can't just do it once. It's, you know, driver's ed, for instance. You have to get so many wheels or so many hours behind the wheel. So mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing. We can't just teach them once how to walk in a line. We have to continue to reteach those skills, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. I'm thinking about, you know, say, especially like a new second grader or maybe my son is in middle school now. So when they enter sixth grade and they start changing classes and having lockers and those kinds of things, those are probably points at which you really have to do this very explicitly, right? It's a whole new environment.
Right. And mm-hmm. all of our middle schools I know I think Bolin spent up to the first 5 days just going over procedures and teaching mm-hmm. skills and reteaching, just so that they understand it. And a lot of times schools will revisit that after, let's say, winter break or maybe after spring break, because kids, you know, forget things over breaks or over long periods of time. So they spend time reteaching those skills.
I suppose one of the reasons for this is that if you don't teach the skills and then the students don't live up to your expectations and you have to take some sort of action, they don't really understand why.
Right.
Is that right?
Right. So we want to make sure they know exactly what the expectations are in different settings. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times there are 3 to 5 big rules or expectations, and a lot of times they are be responsible, be respectful, and be safe, because everything kind of falls under those categories. Well, being safe in Jeff Wirch's science lab looks different than being safe in the gymnasium. Mm-hmm. So classroom teachers are given the autonomy to teach their different expectations in their settings.
Right. I'm just thinking of this incident from when I was a middle school teacher.
Okay.
Where we went to see the choir concert of the kids who were in choir for middle school, and we had this whole auditorium full of middle schoolers. And those in the back row decided this was a really good time to hoot at, you know, like instead of just clapping respectfully like you would in a choir concert, they acted like it was a rock concert, and then they started doing the wave.
Oh, gee.
And so it occurs to me, just thinking of that incident, that we did not tell them what their expectations were before we went into this concert and say, this is not a rock concert, this is a choir concert, this is different. You are in a group. You're supposed to behave a certain way.
Right, and so to teach them those expectations helps, because they know that it's a different setting than, like you said, a rock concert. I mean, I would even equate it to, if you've gone to a movie lately, everybody mm-hmm. is reminded before the movie starts to silence your cell phone.
Right.
I mean, we all know that, but we're still reminded after every, and a lot of times, that's me. I'm the one who has to be reminded because I haven't silenced my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So even adults need reminders with what the expected behaviors are.
Okay. Well, that, I think, is a really good overview. It sounds like, from reading the DPI webpage, that this is both a statewide and a national initiative. So do you know something about the history of this program?
Yes. In 2010, various KUSD schools began implementing it. It was kind of just a handful. And then as we saw the positive results with how the framework works, more schools chose to implement PBIS. But beginning this school year, all of our schools are implementing PBIS. Now, as far as statewide or nationwide, as of July 1st, 2015, 1,143 schools in 250 districts in Wisconsin have been trained and are using PBIS. And nationwide, the last number that I just got off the internet was 21,559 schools in the United States are implementing PBIS.
Okay. It's a big number, although there are a lot of schools.
Right,
so.
Right.
Do you happen to know, you know, in Wisconsin at least, which school districts are choosing to do this and which are not, or does it vary? There's no pattern.
I don't think that there's a pattern. There are quite a few in the in our southeastern area. I know that it's district-wide in Racine.
Mm-hmm. And Milwaukee. So the three largest school districts all have every school participating with PBIS in some way.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, then they're having difficulties, then I think the state actually starts to mandate that they go to this mm-hmm. program.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. So, Ed, you're the coordinator of student support, so you probably have sort of a system-wide view similar to Jane. Can you tell our audience something about the terms evidence-based and data-based decision-making? You know, what kind of evidence and data do you use in implementing PBIS?
Sure. We do kind of have a couple different types of sources of data or evidence that guide the decisions made by the school PBIS teams. For evidence, I guess I think to surveys that are conducted annually. One is in the fall, and it's every staff member. So in a lot of schools even include their education assistants or bus driver. Mm-hmm. And it speaks to a series of questions of how far the system is implemented. So it might ask questions about the administrator attends the regular meetings. There are regular meetings. The expectations are posted. These type of questions for the whole staff to consider would be a response of not in place, partially in place, or in place. And so that's kind of evidence that really informs the team of how far into fidelity they're implementing the system of PBIS, the whole effort. For the data part, typically that comes from behavior data. So oftentimes it could be referrals or suspensions. However, there's a whole category of behavior that we call minor infractions. And so that might be gathered in a different way. It might be just this keeps erupting in a classroom, but it's not to the level that I need to send it out for office consequence. Mm-hmm. So all of that is a data source for teams to look at when they meet at least monthly, also to see patterns of what needs to maybe be implemented from the evidence or what areas in our school or during a certain time of the day right before lunch that comes out of that mm-hmm. the referral or behavior data.
Okay. And then I suppose you can, if you have a smaller group of students like that 15% you told us about that get referred often, does some of it turn up like maybe they have a harder time right before lunch or mm-hmm. right after PE class where they can't settle down? Is that the sort of thing that you look at, like really
very
targeted?
Much mm-hmm. yeah. Very much. And so Jane had highlighted that becomes kind of like a tier two. Mm-hmm. So you're not just doing universal effort, you're starting to do some targeted work with that 15% group of students. And they are charted too. So there's a whole tier two team that comes together at least monthly as well. And they chart the performance of the students. They create what's called a check-in and a check-out card. So again, it might be at an elementary school, a smiley face or a frowny face, and then that becomes data to chart to see if those students are being impacted just by having that check-in in the morning with somebody and a check-out, good job, or if they need to start moving down some path like Jane highlighted with perhaps mentoring or having a counselor group on a certain topic. And doing some of those tier two targeted interventions based on their response to that data.
Mm-hmm. So instead of just sort of, you know, setting out these general expectations and then hoping everyone responds and then maybe having some sort of punishment or other kind of intervention if they don't respond, you actually figure out maybe what is causing the problem. Is it happening at the same time every day or
look for
in
trends.
The same subject and then mm-hmm. and then deal with it that way rather than just kind of having this universal response?
Right. And typically some of those 15% students that aren't responding very well might have like a behavior plan put together. We call mm-hmm. it a functional behavior assessment that really looks at the trigger. Mm-hmm. So what is it, a time of day, or is it I really don't know how to read, so every time I pull out this subject area as a teacher, there's a misbehavior for attention mm-hmm. or avoidance. So that really are some of our interventions available at that targeted tier two level.
So maybe a tutor for a student who's really struggling with reading, or what other kinds of things do you do at that level? What are some examples?
I think in small group instruction sometimes, mm-hmm. I think teachers have come up with some skills to allow a student to work independently at a certain time and then realize that these three need some targeted help instructionally to work with that. Mm-hmm. Again, PBIS is mostly centered around behavior, mm-hmm. So I'm responding to what I know about the academic side of it, mm-hmm. But I think it depends on if there's an aide in the room. I think that right. becomes part of the functional behavior analysis, the behavior plan afterwards of like what does that student really need to help with the behavior that we're seeing, even though it might be an academic trigger.
Okay. So really it's just, you know, trying to look universally at the child in their environment and not assuming anything about why they might misbehave or assume to misbehave, that we look at what they need right. to help them stop this behavior.
And like you started to touch on is that behaviors and academics, there is an overlap. Mm-hmm. You know, so for instance, if a student finds themselves in the office a lot, their academics are gonna, suffer. Mm-hmm. So the idea is we want as many students as we can to be in the classroom. And so what can we do with them behaviorally? So if we notice, like you were saying, that some particular students are, you know, the trigger seems to be they can't do the reading, then what can we do to help them with that? Mm-hmm. So that's more like what we look at it with the Tier 2 interventions and what those students might need individually.
Okay. Listeners probably want to know a little more about how this might actually look in a school. So, Crystal, you have worked at both elementary and middle school levels. Can you tell us a little bit about how the program looks? You're at BRAS right now.
So, I am.
So what does BRAS do with PBIS with elementary students?
So I think you've done a nice job of explaining the background behind it, because I think you have to look at it and from a teacher's perspective, mm-hmm. and what's involved there. So you have the universal team that is kind of the go-to in the building for behaviors that you might be witnessing. But they're also kind of establishing the expectations and putting into place practice scenarios. So at BRAS, we started the year with what we called a matrix walk. And we went through all of the different areas of the building that might be problem-some, where students might have differences in behavior. So, for example, the bathrooms or the cafeteria, the gymnasium. And we talked them through what the expectations are, how to walk in the hallways, and had them practice that in each of the scenarios. And so that was put together by our universal team, and all of the teachers participated in it. So you have that happening, as well as what's happening with the teachers in the classroom. And we talked about the data already. So teachers are really monitoring that data, looking for those triggers and ways to diffuse situations so that they don't become majors, which has really shifted the mindset of a teacher to really looking for those positives. And it's not necessarily, sometimes we get afraid of that word positive and it starts to think of it just being a reward system. And I'd like to, you know, make it clear that a lot of it has to do with the way that we speak to one another and just focusing in on those who are doing it well and doing it right and turning it into a teaching lesson when we do see the poor choices or the behaviors that we don't desire. So from the teacher side, we've got those scenarios going on, both the data and the mindset. And then, of course, there's the teaching of the behavior. And fifth grade, I've been practicing an awful lot about being at a level zero, particularly today.
Well, for volume.
Volume. Right, okay. So in our building, we have a system of voice levels. And so we literally practice what does a level zero look like, and then what does a level one look like, which would be a soft whisper, and a level two would be conversational, and then playground voices. So we mm-hmm. have some fun activities with just practicing, you know, hey, voice four, and everybody screams, and voice level zero. So that's happening with the kids, and just making the whole idea of being safe, being respectful, and being responsible a fun thing and something that we want to do. Mm-hmm. So there's the side of the students where they know the clear expectations from having been taught those. And it's interesting because I do have the background with the middle school, and I've seen schools really been a part of a school that really transformed their culture to the point that the students were walking down the halls and they were saying something like kafuti to one another, because kafuti is a term that we use that stands for keep your hands, feet, and other objects to yourself. So instead,
which is an issue with middle school students, and if any listeners aren't aware of that.
And elementary. When someone is touching your books or knocking your arms or trying to step on your toes, it can often escalate a situation to say, stop it. And instead, you can just turn to them and say, kafuti. And they know that term to mean follow the expectation. And so it's changed the way our students talk to one another in being able to use those expectations.
To remind their fellow students of good behavior rather than lashing out around bad behavior.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. So then the third part that I would add to that is the acknowledgement system that's at the school level. And that really looks different in all age groups. And in schools, I think it has to really buy into what your community is in for. So like at Brass, we have the doghouse. So students can earn brass bucks, and it's two-sided. One side the student gets to keep as if it is worth money, and then one side goes into a team bucket. So they're working towards a team goal. So our fifth grade had to earn 300 team tickets, and then they got a popsicle and a few minutes of extra recess. They were able to do that within the first 2 weeks, which was really a pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. And then they have now their own little piggy banks that they can use to spend at the doghouse store.
So the doghouse is because you're the brass bulldogs?
Yes. Oh, thank you. Thank you for that clarification.
I just wanted to clarify in case people thought there was an actual dog involved. So this sounds, you know, it sounds like it would be the sort of thing that would work pretty well with elementary and maybe kind of well with middle school, but high school students are a whole different group. So, Jeff Wirch, you've been a high school teacher for 21 years. You can tell us a little bit, how does PBIS look at the high school level? And maybe you can remember a little bit about what it looked like before you had PBIS.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And pretty much I was going to start off as well. It looks a lot different at the high school level. And a lot of our students have had, this for a good period of time by the time they get to us. But you know, if you have a high schooler at home or a middle schooler as a child, you need to continue to teach behaviors, you know, at home, and just like we do at the school level and that too. So as Crystal said, I think a lot of the things that we do are carried on. You know, it's kind of a district, you know, kind of theme that we, you know, follow, and we follow with the responsible, respectful, and safe as well. At our level, we have a lot of posters. We do a lot more marketing of it with the students, but we also start off the year the same. We bring them in for assemblies, and then once they're in the assemblies, then we really talk through what are these procedures that, you know, we need to take care of. And we have hallway procedures, bathroom, in the classroom procedures, and at the high school level, the classroom teachers handle those. But it really is kind of a system where we educate everybody to start, and then it's the classroom teachers really take over from there. And then it's our job to make sure that, you know, they understand what they're supposed to do, and from how they enter the room, just like in elementary, to how they leave the room, to how we sharpen our pencils. I mean, the same kind of thing, because you'd think, you know, by that time most often, but, you know, it doesn't. So we have to just continue to reinforce, you know, for all those different time periods all the way through. But one of the big things that high school has really added, and I think we won an award at ITA for one of these, but they've really gone to videos. We have to hit our crowd, you know, so some really catchy videos and things. And I know at Bradford we've made some. ITA, I think, won an award for one of theirs at the state PBS.
Can we see these? Are they on YouTube or are they on the KUSD channel?
I don't know if it's on KUSD. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I saw one once. Yeah. Somebody put it up
there
on
was
Facebook
one,
or something. Mm-hmm.
They won for one that was called Mobile Manners, and it was about how and when to use your cell phone appropriately, and they won a first place at the high school level statewide.
Right. Oh, that's another element of high school. It's the cell phone.
That's a big deal. And then we have, you know, within the classroom,
just so many different ends of that too. So the videos help us, they show them to the kids, but I mean, even things like washing your hands. I mean, we need to continue to reinforce that idea that why washing your hands is about safety and not for you, but for everyone, because you're in the desk that seven other people are going to be in during the day. And, mm-hmm. you know, so there's so many things just to continue to reinforce. But I think the videos have just been huge. And then we also, you know, do different award systems in that too. So they earn, at Bradford, they earn rowdy rewards. Mm-hmm. So they get a little ticket, and then they can collect those, and they have drawings at the end of the week. Right now, Bradford, it's mainly for like spirit wear and things like that. But mm-hmm. they get all kinds of businesses. So businesses, if you're listening, we're always looking for donations for things for the PBIS.
Right.
But definitely looking for items, because then that's some incentives for kids for raffles and other kinds of things. So when they can take their tickets and they can put them in the box, and then we have different drawings and things for small things and big things throughout the year to try to really reward some of the positives that, you know, kids get the intervention things for, or the slips for.
I just wanted to remind our listeners that you're listening to WGTD-FM, and this is Education Matters. This discussion is of the PBIS program with educators from the Kenosha Unified School District. It'll be archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page, and you're also invited to listen there again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. I just want to ask one more question about this, Jeff. So how long ago was PBIS started in your school? Do you remember? Is it like 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, somewhere around there, I believe.
So you were there before that?
Yes.
Do you notice a big difference, and what are some of the things that are different?
I do, and, you know, for probably the average listener listening to the show on that, you know, high school is probably very different than it was then, and I think PBIS has made a big effect. You know, mm-hmm. I think we just assume, I like your example, you started off with a concert this day, mm-hmm. you know, that, I mean, I think I was in the same situation at one point. I wasn't the one yelling, by the way, in the back, but you know, a lot of people need those, like, clarifications, and then I think that's exactly what we need to do from early on, but especially at the high school level. By the time they get there, they just have new things or bigger things that we need to work on and do. So I think it's had a tremendous effect in terms of, you know, before it was like, well, if you're not doing what you're supposed to, you know, our rules read, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And teachers had these rules. And if you didn't follow the rules, then you're out. And, you know, students can get removed from class and things, but we're trying to be proactive and trying to really reduce the number of incidents. And, you know, like Ed said, look at the data. And, you know, sometimes it's not the students. Sometimes it's because of some of the things the staff, maybe we didn't implement well, maybe mm-hmm. that we don't have our security in the right spots, or we're not, you know, our lunch hours, we found at Bradford, they intersected too much. So we weren't helping the kids to make good choices in terms of scheduling and things with that. So mm-hmm. we've done some changes based on the data and things as they study those things and, you know, look at hot spots. And so a lot of that stuff, I think, can be really effective for doing it. But it looks a lot different, I think, in high school than it used to. And I think, you know, teaching behaviors is, like Jane said, the start is just like teaching anything else. I mean, we're teaching many things, and behaviors is one of the most important ones, because that'll get you a job too.
Right. And honestly, you know, I teach college students, and we spend the first whole mm-hmm. week, you know, going over the syllabus, talking about how to turn things in, what happens if you're sick. And then certainly in the dormitories, that is a huge thing. I mean, the residence life staff, learning to live with other people.
Right.
A lot of students
right.
never have shared a room before, mm-hmm. let alone bathrooms and all the rest of
right.
that. So all of it still has to be taught.
Yeah.
Everyone that gets a new job goes through orientation, correct?
Yeah.
So it's sort right. of similar in that way.
Right.
So how is PBIS organized among the school faculty and staff? You kind of addressed this already. So there are tier teams, but who has specific roles, and how is leadership selected and implemented?
So it starts with the PBIS leadership. Oh, this is Jane. It starts with
That's
the PBIS
Jane.
Leadership team, and they are responsible for implementing PBIS throughout the school. And on that team, there is the administrator, several educators, maybe a support staff, and then ideally we'd like a family member to be a part of that team as well. And then those teams are supported by an internal coach. So Crystal, for instance, had been an internal coach at her previous school, and so she was responsible for facilitating. And it's important that the administrator is not the facilitator, because the staff tends to have more buy-in if it comes from their peers rather than just the administrator. So the administrator is an equal member of the team. And then in addition to the internal coach who's the facilitator, there's an external coach. So, for instance, Ed and I are external coaches in the district, and we don't work in the buildings, but we are there to give support and guide the team. And a lot of times they'll say to me, well, what do they do at the other middle schools? Mm-hmm. Tell me what, you know, this is the problem. Tell me how that looks at other elementaries. So I can give that point of view that they might not have because they've only ever been at their school. And then this group at the tier one level tackles many of the foundational behind the scenes kind of tasks and decisions that determine how PBIS functions. Because PBIS is a framework, and like Jeff was saying, it looks different of every single school. So there are schools too that use the acknowledgement system, but it's an elementary school and they only acknowledge class wide. So they might be going towards a school-wide goal, and they, if you happen to see a classroom walking quietly in the hall, the other important thing is when you give an acknowledgement, you say what that's for, because the idea is to kind of end up moving away from tangible so much and just it being a positive reinforcement. So, wow, Mrs. Smith, I really like the way that your class is walking in the hall quietly. Okay, there's their class acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. So that little coin gets to go in the bucket or something. Mm-hmm. So it really does look different at different schools. And that team is what helps to kind of decide, you know, what it looks like as well as input from the staff.
Okay. In the high schools, I know that student leaders have a role to play. Is that mm-hmm. right, Jeff? Can you tell us, you know, how are they selected and prepared and what do they do? What do the high school students do to help?
Right. Well, you're looking for, you know, your leaders and things, and mm-hmm. a lot of kids are very involved and step up with different things. But they're involved, as Jane said, with the committee. Mm-hmm. So students have a voice within the committee. So that's a wide, diverse from parents to administrators, teachers, but we try to get as many students on the committee as possible as well. And then, you know, they're in our videos, which is a big thing. So they help, you know, act out and do that. We have something that kind of goes along with that, at least at Bradford. We call them our link leaders. And these are some of our upperclassmen who work with our freshmen on various things, some of it with PBIS, but just teaching them about, you know, how do we act at the school and how do we do things and, you know, answer questions. And they meet with their kind of home bases maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks and kind of be that mentor, you know, of how we do things and kind of pass down like, hey, when I was a freshman. And because we typically have, you know, the biggest class is the freshman class at the high school level, and we usually have the most, you know, difficulty of, you know, getting them on board with doing things in that. And if we show a lot of success at the freshman level, those students have a better chance of graduating. Mm-hmm. So I think more than anything, we have freshman houses, and we really try to prep our freshmen and try to get them through and help them with those, you know, with the positives, you know.
Right. So if you can help them get through this whole behavioral issue, all of those things are sort of taken off the table, then they can really concentrate on their academics and be successful.
Exactly. Right. And Jane pointed out so well before that it is that, you know, behaviors, you know, 100% affect academics, and we try to model the good ones and, mm-hmm. you know, and try to correct and get the other ones in check and get them to be on the positive route.
I would offer up, this is Ed and I support Indian Trail as an external coach, and they actually recruit every year a team of students. They call them the Trailblazers, who help them inform, like, what is the next video we should do and be part of it, just like Jeff highlighted, or maybe what's being sold in the school store as, like, their cool incentive that they would like to stock up at maybe the doghouse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Right.
So one of my reasons I'm interested in this is because a few years ago, a group of students of mine from Carthage College did just a brief research project on PBIS at one of the middle schools. So they surveyed and interviewed a small group of students at each level, 6th, 7th, and 8th. And kind of as we expected, the data showed that the 6th graders were really on board, and they loved PBIS, and they thought it was a great thing, and they loved being rewarded for being good. And then as they got older, the 7th graders, I call them the skeptical 7th graders and the cynical 8th graders, because they sort of advanced in their, you know, just
right.
growing up and deciding that was a 6th grade thing. I'm moving on from there. Mm-hmm. So have you seen this? Does it happen at the elementary level where your first graders are really into it? By the time they get to 5th grade, maybe they're not. And the same thing at middle and high school. And is there anything that you can do to keep students interested? after that initial burst of being new to a school?
So I can answer as a mom as well as an educator. I have a sixth grade daughter who started at a middle school in town, and I'm the carpool mom a couple times a week, and I have a niece who's an eighth grader. And so it's funny.
It's a natural experiment, right?
It is. And I'm also this school's external coach. So they were saying, that's exactly what the eighth grade teachers were kind of saying, is if you give them the Lincoln Lute, they don't really want it. So mm-hmm. I just said to my niece, I said, so the eighth graders don't really like or appreciate the Lincoln Lute? She's like, no, not really, because they have a store there's nothing there. And I said, well, what if you threw out something, like you all worked towards something together? For instance, like the eighth graders could take all of their Lincoln Lute and put it in the bucket. And as soon as we have 1,000, you might get like 10 minutes of, you know, socializing time. Because what do middle schoolers want? They just want to sit and chit chat with each other. Yeah. And so those are the kind of things that we start exploring, is what fits for the sixth graders, because my daughter's all over it if she doesn't lose half of them, because she usually does.
My son is in seventh grade, and he was crazy about this as a sixth grader. He just thought it was the greatest thing ever.
Right. Yeah. And so she's very excited about it and mm-hmm. can't wait on Friday until the store comes out at lunch. Like you said, the eighth graders, on the other hand, are different. And so I think it's great that the high schools especially have students that are on the committee, because they can voice their opinion and what is kind of value to them. And so I think that we have to reach out even to the elementary students, because they might, you know, have different needs and they don't really want whatever might be offered. I know that at one of the high schools, around prom time, I think, any of the acknowledgement tickets that they give out, they can put into a raffle for prom tickets. So that is pretty...
Because that's expensive.
Oh, I think the tickets at this particular school were $50 each or something. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a big deal for that period of time. Mm-hmm. In fact, they had kids like hoarding them since the beginning of the year, because, of course, we all know that if you have more tickets in the bucket, you have a better chance of winning.
Right.
I think one of the things that you can really do is start... you know, asking the students, mm-hmm. you know, what would make it special to them.
I would completely agree with that. And at the middle school level, there's certainly that need for social, but even kind of that ownership in things, I've found from the middle schools I've worked at, that the idea of moving seats or being able to pay to flip my schedule for the day and having a piece of say in what it was. So not always just having a committee that comes together with it, but giving them some sort of opportunity to make a decision that will impact what they're doing that day. And I like to hope that that's a piece of that flip from, you know, the external to the intrinsic side of things, where they're starting to own a piece of it.
This is Jeff. I think actually it's a... if we flip it a little bit, I think it's really important, this system too, for the teacher, you know, like the students and getting the buy-in and that. But as a teacher, I can tell you that just having those slips and that on me really make me, I mean, I think I've always been really positive in that in the classroom, but it makes me even think. I mean, and when you just give one to them, even without the incentive, the smile you get, I mean, you forget how, you know, just in life, when you compliment somebody or you say something nice to someone, how much they value that. Mm-hmm. And I think as a teacher, when you have these, it's like, oh, I'm going to, you know, and then you just see those smiles and the appreciation, and then them wanting to do that, you know, whether they get it or not, the smile was enough for that. So, you know, it's nice to have the incentives in that as well, and, you know, I'm sure we'll continue to have those. But I think it's really important that, you know, it helps remind us to be even more positive with ones and keep reinforcing all those great habits that these kids are showing us.
Right.
And I would echo that some of the students I've worked with have even worked for that positive phone call home, because they want more than just the smile. They want their parents to recognize mm-hmm. or to see that things are going well. Mm-hmm.
Well, as I predicted, we're actually starting to run out of time. We have about 4.5 minutes left. I do want to ask this question about teachers. I'm sure that not every teacher is a big fan of this. So I'm wondering if any of you can answer, Jane, Crystal, or really anyone, how do you bring reluctant teachers along? How do you sell them on this as a positive thing for the school?
Well, one of the things, this is Jane, one of the things we do is we include the staff in decision making. So when Ed was talking earlier about surveys that are taking, really everything that is done is data driven. So for instance, if you had a kickoff at Brass, they might give a survey to, you know, the staff to see what they thought of the kickoff and then alter it next time based on the decision, you know, what the survey showed, for instance. You want to make it very transparent and shared, so data should be shared all the time at the schools so that they can see that it is making a difference in behaviors. We don't have as many students being, you know, escorted to the office because it's making a difference. Ed, again, I talked about that at least annually they are surveyed on a web-based survey that's called the SAS. And then, you know, there are many schools that have a acknowledgement system even for the teachers. I mean, I taught at my last elementary, and I'd go to the PTA meeting, and the next day there was a note in my mailbox from the principal that said, "Jane, thank you for coming to the PTA meeting. It really makes a difference when teachers are there." I mean, so even getting administrations or even kind of if you've ever heard of like the bucket filling, getting teachers to kind of recognize and acknowledge what we're doing, because how often do you hear what you did wrong rather than all the good things that you're doing right? So we like to try to acknowledge teachers as much as students.
And I would add to that making that connection to academics, and that we would teach certain things a certain way, and that behavior is no different, and that buys us more time in the classroom with their students in an academic standpoint, that's often kind of the deal breaker that helps students or teachers to recognize the importance. And I was going to say the same thing about the teacher recognition, but I'd also add to that that sometimes the holdback is that idea that this is just a reward system. And it's so much more than that. And when we can help teachers to recognize, parents and community for that matter, to recognize that it's really about just being kind to one another and helping each other through these sticky situations, that unease kind of settles.
It's a relationship builder.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a key, I think, with it.
Okay. Well, we actually are out of time. So I want to thank all of you. Jane Larson is in her 25th year of service to KUSD and is currently the district's PBIS teacher consultant. Thank you, Jane.
You're welcome.
Jeff Wirch is a district and statewide award-winning teacher who's taught biology for 21 years and is one of Bradford High School's instructional leaders. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.
Ed Kupka is the coordinator of student support for all of KUSD. Thank you, Ed, for being here.
You're welcome.
And Crystal Brandt is currently teaching fifth grade at Brass Community School, but has worked as a middle school teacher and a consultant and coach throughout her career. So thanks, Crystal.
Thank you for this opportunity.
You're listening to WGTD-FM, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the PBIS program with educators from Kenosha Unified School District is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or listen from the beginning if you missed part of it. Or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org. And you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Gateway kicks off this fall's Big Read, centered on the classic novel True Grit, Friday, October 7th, in the Monograna Auditorium on Gateway's Kenosha campus. True Grit author Charles Portis, biographer Jay Jennings will present.
Support comes from Piasecki Althaus, hosting Surviving the Holidays, a free one-day grief share event offered to help adults dealing with the death of a loved one during the holidays. Sunday, November 13th from 4 until 6:30. To register, call 658-4101.
Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, featuring Candle Envy, unique candles made from real flowers and foliage, submerged in mineral oil, resulting in a clean burning candle that's cool to the touch. Kenosha Harbor Market on 2nd Avenue and Plaza Douay is open Saturdays from 9 to 2.
Hi, I'm Bob Tenuta of the Gateway Radio Reading Service. We volunteers read the local newspapers to the visually impaired over the radio. Would you like to do the same and not having to move one toe out of your home? Call me at 561- 864-3870.
Attention all Facebook users, you're invited to click Like WGTD for breaking news, photos, station program information, links to archives, and to interact with WGTD employees and listeners. The page is available to non-Facebook subscribers as well. WGTD's Morning Show. Insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It's always makes for a better interview, for at least for the author, when the interviewer is actually